Hello, everyone. Again, I'm Megan Mead. I'm the environmental epidemiologist for Indiana Environmental Public Health Division. And we're all kind of riding the wave of Flint, Michigan right now, but we've been trying to get out the word with lead poisoning for a while. So this is a special project we've been doing for a collaboration with some of our local health partners and some other federal organizations and nonprofit agencies, looking at lead exposures in a Burmese community. So I'm just going to give you some background on lead poisoning, some of the rates in Indiana and also nationally, some of the methods we've done with our investigation, the results that we found with our sampling efforts, and some conclusions from our project. So as some of you may know, lead poisoning has permanent impacts to communities. It has effects to the central nervous system, the developing baby, and pregnant mothers, major organs, blood immune systems, sensory systems, hearing loss in children, deposits in the bones so it actually can cycle back through and experience lead poisoning again, decreases in IQ scores, cognitive and learning skills, and behavioral impacts. I think the CDC said that 10% of children with low test scores can actually be contributed to lead poisoning. Long-term health effects later in life with elderly. And also, we're looking at increases in crime and teen pregnancies associated with lead exposures, and some of the states are actually going towards economic impacts from lead poisoning. So just a general overview of statistics for CDC in Indiana, kind of what lead poisoning looks like. So we can see these dramatic decreases in lead poisoning contributed to the removal of lead-based paints and also removal of leaded gasoline. So we kind of have this plateau in the last 6 years of these lead exposures still happening in children. So it's still in the environment somewhere. So for Indiana, we kind of have a similar experience where we see these dramatic decreases. And then after the CDC removed funding, we have decreases in testing. And also we're not seeing those children when we're not testing for them. We're not seeing those lead poisonings. So the last 2 years, I wanted to do a project to look at what does lead poisoning look like for Indiana? What's contributing to lead exposures for children? So I plotted the 92 counties in Indiana with the last 6 years of data, and each point indicates a county with their lead rate and also the percentage of older housing. So we can see this nice relationship with the older housing with the lead rates. It's very statistically significant, and we kind of created this equation so county health departments can kind of plug in their percentage of older housing and look at how many kids they would expect to have lead poisoning in their county. So there are also some other things going on besides just older housing. So two counties in Indiana have a large Burmese population, and the upper right corner is actually Allen County, and that's where Fort Wayne, Indiana is. And then also we have Marion County, which is that center dot, and that's Indianapolis, Indiana. So 14% of the Burmese population have actually settled in Indiana, and a lot of that proportion is in Marion and Allen counties, and so we can still see that that is actually increasing still, especially in Marion County. So one of my colleagues in the Food Protection Program came to me with a product, and she had some questions about lead poisoning within this certain population and this product that they use. And so we actually started doing some research, and there was actually a investigation that was led by the CDC looking at some products that this population used. And there are two digestive aids that they found that had high lead and high arsenic. And just remember the bottom image, because I'll come back to that later. So again, that was the investigation trigger, is when she came to me about this product. It was one part per million, and it's actually called the Hanukkah. It's a cream. And it wasn't too elevated to actually cause lead poisoning in the child, but it was kind of an indicator of using other products that are pretty traditional that this population might use with lead that had lead concentrations in it. So the Hanukkah is a cream that they'll actually apply to their face and their skin. After they're done applying, they'll actually ingest the rest of it off their finger. So there's dermal exposure and actually ingestion exposure as well. And again, that's the Dotway product too. And I've actually heard from Marion County that they banned this product because some of the kids were coming in with it on their face and it actually dry and flake off onto the school desk. So after we received, after looking at the lead statistics for this population, we kind of confirmed that there is an issue here. The lead rates for the Allen County population are still higher than the other demographics. We looked at some research looking at what could be contributing to their lead poisoning rates. So we looked at cultural, dietary, medicinal, cosmetic, environmental health information to try and see, you know, what we should go out and sample to try and figure out what's contributing to these lead poisonings within this population. So we tried to identify commonly used products by talking to the store clerks within these stores. The translators that we were working with, he was actually a translator in the health department clinics. He was a dentist in Burma, so he was very familiar with the population and some of the health considerations. We were able to use funds from the county to actually go out and purchase products to sample. So we ended up sampling 77 products with 48 products and then also 77 samples of those products. So we targeted dried, salted, smoked, pickled, fermented, processed, imported fish and seafood products because we know that was something that they were trying to consume on a daily basis. We also looked for dried imported spices because we knew that there was some lead risk with that. They also used that in their cooking. Any variation of rice products, looking for arsenic, Burmese cosmetics, herbal remedies and pharmaceutical products, and also we added candy because we knew that was also a risk with other populations. So we ran analyses for these products and also added mercury and PCBs because that's what led our Fish Consumption Advisory for Indiana. So we wanted to see how those fish products matched up with our advisories. So this kind of reiterates our sampling plan. So the results of these products, we have a side-by-side of the lead quantities and the arsenic quantities. We found products that were over 15 parts per million in one of the fish products and also six pharmaceutical products. But it's important to know that 65% of the products had some level of lead in them. 86% of the pharmaceutical products had a high level of lead, and this wasn't anything to cause, we didn't use certain levels to associate with health risk, but we just kind of quantified it based on the other products. So 86% were the pharmaceutical products. So these were the high-level products that were above 15 parts per million. The first product is a fish powder. They'll use this to make gravies, paste. They'll also use it to make soups. We also found cadmium in this product. I think it was 0.22 parts per million for cadmium and also 0.2 for PCBs in a fish powder. So that was pretty interesting. With this other pharmaceutical product, they actually use this in a commercial in Malaysia, and all the celebrities are in the commercial. And they'll use it for fertility. They'll use it for a multivitamin when they're not feeling well. So it's commonly consumed. The products that were found, 1 to 5 part per million, were fish products. So they had a dry stingray, which is in the bottom right corner. A lot of the fish products, we went in there, it's a plastic bag with a fish in it and a rubber band around it. So it was very hard to try and identify those fish and try to do any recall where those fish products were coming from. So it was a very eye-opening experience. If you have ever been in any of the ethnic stores, I definitely recommend you going in. And also we found the Dutch wagon in the stores. So we were told that those were actually supposed to be removed off the shelves in 2009. And we still found that product out there. And it's nice to see that the level has come down for lead, but there's still some lead in those products. And the rest of the products are pharmaceutical as well. The lower level products, the 0.1 to 1 part per million, we found 2 or 3 different varieties of Sahanica, pharmaceutical products, also fish softs, fish gravy, which they use on a daily consumption basis. Turmeric powder, which I found in other states was elevated too. So after taking some of the fish samples, we wanted to see how that matches up with our own fish consumption advisory. So we used the Ohio EPA benchmark for lead. We used the ORSANCO, the Ohio River Advisory benchmark, Indiana's benchmark and also the EPA benchmark to see how that would match up with different size individuals. So the one fish sample that we have with 4.7 parts per million actually exceeded every criteria except for the 70 kilogram individual adults at the EPA reference dose. So we also want to apply the consumption rate, which we got from Washington, a study from Washington that looked at the consumption rates among that group in Asia, and it was 117 grams per day. And so we kind of did an estimate for the adolescent consuming 44 grams per day. And we applied that to our fish tissues, and we saw that this population also eats the whole fish, and that was another consideration that we had to take into account. And so looking at the Ohio River benchmark, which is the 0.172 microgram per kilogram body weight, 51% of our samples exceeded that. So that was very interesting. So some of the things that we could see is that there are a variety of sources of lead among this population. Many products coming into the country without traceability or any inspections. It's still falling through, so we have to capture that somehow. Lead screenings among the refugee populations. It was pretty interesting because it seemed to most of the screening was being done for the Burmese population and the other populations that were coming in. Lead screenings in general have decreased with decreased funding, and also fish consumption recommendations have to be taken into account with susceptible populations. So again, delivering your advisories with the susceptible populations and working with federal partners at the top level so they can try to remove these products internationally or try to figure out where these lead sources are coming from. And then working with your local community to develop messaging. So we've reached out to New York State Department of Health and North Carolina as well, which are doing similar projects. New York actually found that the thumbs up, thumbs down method works very well with that community. And using green and red markers for the advisory work really well for finding locations to fish. So just consider the population you're working with. So we had a session yesterday about occupational health and kind of looking at these long-term outcomes. And so I believe when we start doing targeted screening and raising awareness with these certain populations, we'll actually increase the rates that we have for lead poisoning overall. So with Indiana especially, we're kind of targeting our outreach and education to these susceptible groups. And so that impacts our rates for the whole state. And so last year we saw an increase in the levels at 10 and above, and we didn't really know why. And then we started looking at this population, and we saw that increase, and that's where it was coming from. So investigating, collaborating, and testing your hypotheses to understand the social factors that influence morbidity. So this is some of our preliminary findings that were just the impact that we had last year. So we started this in 2014 and started going out to local events that the local health departments were going to be at and just talking about this susceptible population. And what we found was that looking at the data, we increased our screening rates by 3 times. So that was within this demographic group, which was really surprising. And overall, we increased it across Indiana, not just these 2 counties with that population. So that was pretty surprising. So just within the last 2 years of kind of spreading the word, we can see an increase in the lead rates for these 2 counties. And then so we were able to, with this effort, identify over 7 times more children at the 10 microgram per deciliter above level, which I think had an impact. And also with Marion County, they had an increase as well. So we increased our screening rates by 3 times. Also doubled the number of children ID'd with 5 micrograms per deciliter, and we had a substantial increase in the number of kids ID'd at 10 and above. And then we can see similar impacts in Marion County and Allen County. So we increased awareness among the specific population. We saw an initial increase, and then we anticipate decreased rates over time. And we don't know when that decrease is going to happen, if it's going to be 10 years out when we are kind of done with the population and they're kind of, we're raising that awareness. and we're moving those exposures, or if it's going to be 20 years out. So it's just different things to consider. And then we're identifying other susceptible populations with more geographical analyses, which will be very interesting as well. And definitely collaboration. So this investigation, it wasn't just our department, it was many departments and also different levels, especially at the county. Marion County is now doing their own sampling effort, and they've actually already identified some cookware that was very elevated, and they're doing some leaching tests right now to see how much that leaches into the person. So these are my references. I'll take questions.
Sir? I'm curious, did you update the questionnaire to get the physicians for screening? Did that include any information? Like, if you're Burmese, would that trigger a lead test?
So we tried to update the nurse consulting forms when they go out. And it's kind of specific to the population. So we were already working with Marion County and Allen County and the people that were going out and kind of working with this population. So they kind of already knew what to look for. And they've done an ongoing effort to submit samples and try to look for different things in the person's home that could contribute to their lead poisoning. But we're trying to also revitalize and look over our home screening forms with the nurses again.
Early on, you showed a slide of older homes.
Yes.
So my question is, do you routinely check the home paint or drinking water supply in those homes when you do have elevated? When you focused on this particular thing, but in general, do you do more than that?
Yeah, so our lead program has a lot of initiatives right now. This is just one of them that we identified. Right now I'm developing lead risk maps for older housing and poverty. And so we're going to be able to kind of zoom in at the county or sub-county level and look at different pockets of older housing. We do have lead risk assessors for the state, and we also have lead risk assessors for the county. So if the county cannot go out and do a risk assessment, the state, our state workers will go out and help them. And we'll also offer at the 5 microgram per deciliter level as well.
Did they actually go out and test the paint?
Yes. Yes.
Sir? Steve Whitaker, Public Health, Seattle County Council. Can you tell us a little bit about your health leadership efforts to the community? Did you work with the community at all to figure out how best to deliver the messaging?
Yeah, so I actually included a larger portion about the actual population, but I had to cut that out. So we tried to identify nonprofits and resettlement agencies that are working with those populations. We talked to people that were pretty pronounced in the community, like the translator that's in the clinics. He was actually a dentist over in Burma. And meeting with them regularly, having phone calls with the local health departments, and then also going out and having meetings with the local organizations and seeing if they would be able to help us with the translation part of creating those advisories. And it's been pretty successful, but we're trying to wait to get the sampling results back from Marion County, because one of the things was the language barriers, and also our sampling was pretty limited. So we don't know what the product levels are for the rest of the products in the stores. So we don't want to tell people to not use this product, and they'll go and use another product that we didn't test, which is higher lead. So you have to be very delicate and weigh those things and just look at all your options.
Did you, have you done any advisory though to not use any of the products tested? Or you just got the test results and you're still?
Yeah, so we got the test results, and the way that we wanted to kind of set an advisory right now is we took the highest products and created an advisory, and I had to take that out from this presentation too with all the content. So we created that, and the hardest part was trying to get somebody to translate it for us. So we're, especially with the messaging that the communication methods that we obtained from New York, we want to do that to our fish advisory and also for these products as well. Thank you.